So today on the podcast, we have a few things to talk about with the Wolves, the Wild, and the Twins. When we go through this, we're just going to try to highlight a couple of the facts of and a couple of things that have been going on with some of the prospects, going through some things that the GM has said, and then discussing potential things and outlooks of each team. So we'll kind of move on with that, and we'll start off with the Minnesota Timberwolves. Okay, so this week the Timberwolves started the summer league, right? And down in Las Vegas, and looks like some of the reporters seem to be a little happier because they have more contact. They can actually, like, for the first time in over a year, Dane Moore had a podcast with Gerson and Chris Finch. So that's kind of something new. You get a little more access now as fans. We get to hear that in some of the things that they're sitting down to have conversations. Very interesting. So let's get into it. We're going to talk with the preseason. The first game we played, I believe it was on Monday for the Wolves. Some notable guys that were in the game on Monday that we all kind of know if you're a Wolves fan is Jaden McDaniels, Jalen Noel. Okay, we have guys like McKinley Wright. We have Isaiah Miller. We have is it Nathan Knight? So, but let's talk about some of the players that have shown up in summer league. Skyler, kind of give us a summary of what you're seeing. And kind of like what, or just what you think that you've seen so far, not even necessarily to game one, just in general. Like, in general, what are you seeing for some of these players? You like what you see, or what's up?
So yeah, I mean, obviously Jalen Noel and McDaniels, they're like the guys. The ball is in their hands the majority of the time. I'll let you talk about Jalen Noel since I know that you love him. As for Jaden McDaniels, what I've been impressed about is he looks to be able to handle the ball a little better. He's had some nice fast break moves. And he's had some nice passes where he's been live dribbling and passing. So it looks like his ball skills have gotten better. So that's good to see. One of my favorite guys that I've noticed is Nathan Knight. He's been starting for us, and I think last year he played for the Hawks, if I'm not mistaken. And
Sure.
this guy's just kind of caught my eye on offense at first. He's a big guy. He's 6'10", 220 pounds, something like that. And on offense, I mean, his feet look quick. He can dribble to the hoop too. He's had a few nice drives that I've noticed, and just not normal for a 6'10" guy to do those types of drives to the basket, and that's what caught my eye. And then I kind of started doing a deeper dive on this guy. He came from William and Mary's College, which is it's still a Division I school. It's a smaller conference. I think it's the AAC conference. And when I was looking at this Nathan Knight guy, I realized that he was the defensive player of the year in his conference, and he was an all defensive player 3 out of the 4 years that he was at his college. And so I think that there's a little something there with this guy. And when he was at Williams and Mary's College, he was not just a defensive specialist. He averaged over 18 points in 3 out of the 4 seasons that he was there. So I think this guy's an interesting prospect. That's kind of what I've noticed. So I'll let you speak on that then.
Wow, I mean that was a good breakdown there. So, I didn't know that. So he apparently is more than just an average defender. I mean, coming in from what he's doing, like he at least has an idea of how to play defense because you said he had three. Was it 3 out of 4 years he was the D player of the year in
Three
that
out of
conference?
4 years, he was all defensive. And then
Wow.
the last year, his senior year, he got the Defensive Player of the Year award.
Wow, that's really cool. So yeah, clearly a guy who like you were saying, I've noticed it too, is a his ability to be mobile with that size and then to potentially have a little bit of a handle and to come down, you know, the lane with some drives, and not only just nice powerful drives, but like he's seemingly somehow, you know, he's in control of his body. So it seems to be a nice little chance for Nathan Knight to potentially, you know, make the back end. He's not going to play in the top 9 or 10 or however many guys we do in a rotation, but you know, like I think it'd be cool to see him maybe get a contract and get on the G League team, you know, to give him more of a chance. I've been watching McKinley Wright. I've had some friends text me some of their thoughts. One friend thought he was going to be a very good backup point guard, and you know, I just personally, I can't sit here and say they're wrong or anything like that. He does a lot of smart things. He's using control of his body. He's making the right pass. He can't shoot outside of 16 feet. That's my issue with him. His defense is good. He's undersized. Okay, he's built like a fire hydrant. You know, to me, when I watch him, it seems that like his ceiling just can't be that high, and I can't imagine him being an effective backup point guard on a team that might need some more shooting once you get past the first four main shooters in the team, right? Like, we'll see. And his not being undersized doesn't always help, but I think it'd be nice to see him in the G League too. And I'm not sure if he's. I just don't see him making the team as a backup point guard this year, unless he proves himself. And for whatever reason, we end up not signing Jordan McLaughlin, because that right now would be our backup point guard. And he's still a free agent, so we'll see there. Then you know, I like you said, Jaden McDaniels and Jalen Noel have been amazing. Like, it seems when I'm watching Jaden McDaniels, he's consistently doing well in the first half, and then he kind of takes his foot off the gas a little bit offensively, and more so he's taking more jumpers in the second half. I don't know if that's the case, whether it's conditioning, tired, maybe just loses focus. Maybe it's just that's what's being given to him by the defense. I'm not sure. I haven't watched that close. But, you know, I think the last two games, the only two games they played, or no, they played three now. But the last two games I've watched, both first halves, he dropped, I think, a dozen or something like that. In the second half, he didn't do all that much. But defensively speaking, he looks good. It looks like Jaden McDaniels is a contender to be one of the top two defenders on the Wolves, which not sure if that's saying that much, but it's interesting, you know. And Jalen Noel, go ahead.
Do you think that Jaden McDaniels can be a top two defender on the Wolves this coming year?
Good question. I do. If this is the roster, it's going to be a toss up between these three first. Probably Vando, probably be Okogie, and it'll probably be him. I think it's like any one of them could, one of them gets hurt, well, then they, you know, or one of them like doesn't get as much minutes, that changes things too. But yeah, I think those are the three that you got to look at. So like, say there's a good chance of that happening. I will say though, to add on this point, I think the fourth best defender, there's a serious chance to be argued, and this is a hot take to a lot of people. Anthony Edwards has a chance to be our fourth best defender this year. And that would be saying something. That would be important, because now you would have a potential Okogie and Edwards playing at least average or above average defense, maybe going forward after this year. And then you have a McDaniels and a Vanderbilt in the wing, in the back, in the front court. Now you have two areas of the court with two defenders at each area being able to play some defense. That's something you can work with if you're Gerson and Chris Finch. So, so I guess we're 3-0, and I was looking at the tournament outlay, or the way it was put out. So there's no tournament this year, right? It's the first time that they're not doing that in a long time. So it's just they play four games. Each team plays four games. Whoever has the best record advances to the championship. Now you have to ask yourself, what if there's multiple teams that are going to be undefeated in 4-0, which there's a very high chance that's going to happen. Then it goes to tiebreakers, and the tiebreakers go to point differential, I believe. And, yeah, I think it's point differential. I think that's one of the first tiebreakers. So, and after that, I think it's like points scored and then points allowed or something like that. So if you're wondering if the Wolves, for whatever reason, go 4-0 and they win their Sunday game, which is their last regular season summer league game, then, and you're like, why aren't they in the championship? It's probably because they lost a tiebreaker. But, you know, you notice what happened today, Sky? That was pretty good for the T-Wolves in the tiebreak.
They blew Milwaukee out, so their point differential should be one of the better ones in the league.
Exactly, bingo. So like, it should be right now at the very worst top three, because most teams are scoring about. Go ahead.
Yeah. Also, there was not a summer league last year, correct?
You're right. There was not.
Okay, so 2 years ago, I'm pretty sure it was the same format for the championship game, and I'm pretty sure there was a 3-1 team in that championship game. So just saying that if we don't go 4-0, there's still a chance we could get in the playoffs.
There is a chance. Yeah, there's definitely a chance of that happening. Hopefully we don't have to talk about us. Maybe we'll win Sunday's game. I'd like to see McDaniels continue to just play good. We need more two-way players like Gerson alluded to in the podcast with Dean. But we also need guys that can, you know, like fill a nice role in next to our three main stars. And I think McDaniels, he does fit. The question still belongs of is he a three or a four? And in most people's minds, he's a three. Some people like to say stretch him out to a four. If you have Andre Drummond or you have a guy who is a dominant rebounder, dominant rim protector next to McDaniels, if he's playing the four, McDaniels is, yeah, it could work. But Towns isn't that. And Towns needs more than McDaniels, in my opinion, for him to be at his best. So that'll be something interesting to look to see where that goes. I'll touch on Noel before we go on to the podcast here about Dane Moore and Gerson and Finch. Jalen Noel's been today was his and I'm not gonna say his breakout game. He's had a couple like high scoring games, whether it was preseason or summer league now. But he dropped, I think it was 26, like 6-3 or something like that today. Six rebounds, I believe, too. He had more rebounds than McDaniels, which that's a little concern of his for me. I think it's his ball handling and his rebounding ability as a 6'9 guy. But Jalen Noel looks to be a guy that can have serious impact from about 17, 16 feet within to the basket. Anything more than that, I still question. He can shoot the three. He did it in Washington and did it in the G League. I just question Jalen Noel's ability to make the three consistently right now. Sure, that'll come. He's so young. He's 21. But his jump shot's real, man. His fadeaway is his little floater game. It's definitely real. Question is, can he be a good enough playmaker? Can he also be at least an average defender? Which I guess it'll be remain. You know, what are your thoughts about Noel? Did you like what you said? Could he be a pretty good backup this year?
You took the words right out of my mouth. I was watching, especially today, and he's a little streaky on the three-point line. He missed like three or four in a row where the three was just wide open and just wasn't even really close. And then he came back and he like drove baseline and then pulled up and made a jumper, and then I think that got him going a little bit, and then he had like a step back three after that. So I definitely see potential in his shot. It's a nice looking shot, and he can make them. It's definitely a work in progress, his 3-point shot.
You know, I just wonder, could he be a guy that is first or second guy off the bench, like? You know, like it, let's say we because I don't think you're at between quarters like 2 and 3. I don't think you're gonna have, in my opinion, D'Lo, Ant, Beasley, and Towns on the court all together at the same time a lot. I personally don't think that. I think we're gonna stagger out our lineups because our bench needs some scoring, and I think that means Beasley is gonna see a lot of time with between quarters 2 and 3. Now this is like this, but in quarters 2 and 3, I think it's going to be definitely Beasley with some of the backups. And then I think Noel, I mean, that's enticing to me. You might not have a lot of defense in your backcourt if you play Noel and Beasley together, but that is a backcourt that can seriously score off the bench. I mean, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think Jalen Noel is a great guy off the bench. And I know that you have talked about like trading Beasley in a package because Noel is here and he can fill the role that Beasley fills as a scorer/shooter. And Jalen Noel actually can bring a little bit more ball handling to the table, a little more versatility to the table than Beasley can. Beasley's a way better shooter, especially from three. Yeah. But I think Jalen Noel would have no problem if he had to filling those shoes, filling those minutes if Beasley were to go in a trade.
Yeah, and that's a good point. And the last thing I'll wrap up with Noel here is I've watched his game over time now, and you got to watch how do you score your points. We know your percentages, but how? And I watch him, and this is the reason why I don't think he's fit to ever start with our core right now, unless D'Lo's not here. But like, I don't think he's fit to be a starter next to three other guys that will star in their roles to an extent, because he's not a great catch and shoot guy. When I watch Jalen Noel, he needs the ball in his hands. He needs to bounce the ball like 5 or 6 times. He needs to make a cut. He needs to dribble hard, get some contact, and he gets into his shot so much better. When you start asking him to play alongside two other good shooters from outside, and you start asking him to send the corner or come around screens and catch and shoot, that's not his game. He needs the ball in his hands, and I think that's why you put him in a bench role, giving him like a lot of ball handling opportunities. And that's how you initiate his offense, kind of, in my estimate. So he's a great guy to come off the bench, play 20 minutes a night, you know, add 10 points a game. You know, it's not going to be inefficient either. You know, there's some guys that definitely come off the bench and they shoot 40%, and teams take that. But Noel's a guy who can legitimately shoot maybe 43, 44%, you know, for a field goal. And he can shoot maybe 35% this year. I think that's a good goal for him, 35% from three this year. So we'll see there. Let's move on to Gerson and the podcast I had with Dane Moore that was released like 2 days ago, I think, something like that. And
do you want to talk about the interview that Gerson had today during the summer league game?
Oh yeah, yeah. Did you catch some of that?
Yeah. Yeah.
What did you see on that? What were some statements or what was going on?
So yeah, just a few quick points that I took from it was, I mean, Gerson has been reiterating that, I mean, he likes our core. He doesn't want to break it up. He said that before, and he said it today during the interview. So I thought that was interesting. He also pointed out that we do need defense, and we need to improve our defense. And he said that this summer league team and roster, he kind of built some of it off of defensive potential. And then when he said that, that's when I noticed Nathan Knight and how he was the defensive player of the year. Also a dude that was really good at defense is Isaiah Miller. He didn't play as much. I don't think he wasn't a starter, but he was getting some minutes, and I looked up his college stats, and he averaged like 3 steals a game at his college. So I thought that was interesting. But yeah, just those 2 points that he doesn't want to break up the core, and that's probably why he didn't make a trade. And Gerson is realizing that we need defense, and he's trying to do something about it by bringing these prospects that are good at defense in.
Yeah, and maybe he's also thinking about Rondae Hollis-Jefferson and probably wanting to cut him. Maybe that was Ryan Saunders, but I get the sense that wasn't. But, yeah, hopefully he can realize that you can't play small guys next to Towns. But, you know, the comment – what was it that you said? So the comment about – this is our core, and we don't want to break it up. So he's clear, and he's said it on the record. It's clearly referring to D'Lo, Ant, and Towns. That is our core. Okay, that is what he's referring to. He mentions Beasley sometimes, but
yeah, he mentions McDaniels sometimes too. But
it sounds like he will not. You will not be trading one of those three anytime soon, at least this year, for any kind of player or star. That's just the way I see it. Does that mean that McDaniels and Beasley are safe? I would think yes for this year, probably, if I was a betting guy. I don't think they're going to get traded at this point unless Ben Simmons' camp comes way down and the Warriors and the Spurs and whoever else, maybe they're not as interested and maybe we get a good deal on Ben Simmons. But unless that happens, I'm not so sure that this roster is going to change. So the other thing I wanted to go through is Chris Finch made a really interesting comment when asked from Dane Moore, which was a good follow-up of how are you going to get these guys to play defense? And you remember what I'm talking about, Sky, here?
Jog my memory.
So when this happened, immediately Chris Finch goes, we got to get our – give a shit factor, that's got to go up. And immediately when he says that, you know, I'm thinking to myself, like, wow, like, I love that transparency. And that felt very emotional almost. Like, and you don't get a lot of emotion from Chris Finch, which isn't a bad thing. It's just like he just doesn't show a lot of emotion. And it just dawned on me that, like, that's the first time I've heard a coach since maybe Thibs kind of really emphasize that, like, we're just not giving our full effort. And it's nice to hear that as a fan. Like, it's sad to say that, but that's just the reality of where this franchise is. Like, it's nice to hear that people and our coach want us to have a give a shit factor consistently up higher on defense. Because let's be honest, since we had Butler, since we had Jimmy, since we had KG back, like, from 04, 05, like, man, dude, like, we haven't had the high level of intensity on defense. You know, Kevin Love's time here, that wasn't really there. That was the missing part. Like, we had Kevin Love dropping almost 30 a night, and we're scoring 110, and we're losing games because our defense sucked. So it's nice to hear that. Hopefully, and he also talked about, and Gerson reiterated, like, actions are going to speak a lot more than words. So we're going to talk about winning. We're going to play hard, and you know, if we do those things, we're going to win games. So, just what were your thoughts there, Sky, on some of the things that, you know, I kind of talked about with Finch? What are your thoughts on, like, what Finch said there?
It's super refreshing to have a coach be open about that kind of stuff. A lot of coaches he was kind of throwing his team under the bus saying, like, it's not my fault that like we only won 22 games or however many games we won last year. Like, our players need to improve, especially on defense. So he was being real and transparent. I liked that part for sure.
Yeah. And I just hope for my sake, like, my sanity, that he gets guys to play harder, because we can keep talking about it. This is Towns' seventh year in the league. Okay. Or it's either sixth or seventh year in the league. He's 25 now, but turning 26 in November. So, you know, you'd like to say that these guys could give more effort. It's just, can they, and will they? And, like, I just hope that, you know, like, I've seen before where Towns' effort is really nice for like 20 games. And then that effort, like, maybe it gets waned a little bit, so it gets beaten down a little bit because the team isn't performing. up to snuff, and then boom.
20 games is a long time. You can see his defense.
It's a long time, but you gotta like, you gotta be able to like LeBron said, you know, like in his show, like you, there's the difference between stars and casuals. Casuals can't stay locked in every minute of the game, 82 game season a year. You know, like there's great players with great talents all around the league. There's multiple players in each team. But can you lock in? Can you lock in on both sides of the ball every game, every other night, going from LA to Portland to San Antonio to Milwaukee and keep playing hard without losing a step? And then mentally be able to, you know, like communicate with your teammates. Like there's just a lot going on there. How many players do we have that we know can truly do that? My concern is that when times get tough there this year, and it damn well, it always does, there's going to be a point where we go on a 6-7 game losing streak. I guarantee it, or at least 5 games. And when times get tough, who the hell is our leader in that locker room? We don't even have Ed Davis anymore. Like, that was our mental leader. We don't have Rubio, who was the biggest mentor to Edwards. And I don't like Rubio as a player. But, man, dude, like, you're looking at the oldest rostered guys on our team are Jake Layman and Karl-Anthony Towns and D'Angelo Russell. Really? It's – I don't know what you – what do you think there?
I mean – you said, you alluded to that 20 games, and I mean, I would say locking it in for 20 games of how bad Minnesota basketball has been the last since Karl-Anthony Towns has been with us, minus that 1 year. I mean, that gives me hope, because if he can lock it in for 20 games and it's that bad, I think when with the right pieces around him, like Ant, D'Lo, McDaniels, like we're finally getting this core that's built from within. I think I am being optimistic that I think he can lock it in for longer, because things, I mean, it's just as when things get bad, it's just so hard. And I don't blame him, honestly, for losing focus, but now he has no excuses.
My last thing here before we talk about free agents and stuff like that, is this is my reasoning of if I'm Gerson, I go in, I make sure if I can't get in a trade to get a physical, gritty center next to Towns, that I get Jared Vanderbilt or at least something like that who can play kind of gritty, like in spry with that energy. Like if you watch Towns, I think physically that's another topic. I don't think he wasn't physically fit last year. It's a different topic. But mentally, I think mentally he gets caught up. I think we all see it. This isn't a surprise to anyone who watches the Wolves. He gets mentally caught up in the middle of a game on silly fouls, and he gets mm-hmm. – he starts – there's certain players that can do those things, and it brings their level play up to a different notch. You look at Jordan when he sometimes gets some silly fouls. It got his game to a higher focus. And then there's other athletes like Karl-Anthony Towns that when they start making these fouls, they lose their head, and they can't play through that kind of mental wear and tear, whatever that does to you. And there's some guys that are cut out to take that and not. And I think Towns, we've seen that. We've seen that for 6 years. His ability right there is not changing. And I don't even think that changes. Even like the year where we were winning Butler, there were so many games where he was almost falling out. And he was jeopardizing our team. And it was just Butler and Wiggins late in games. People forget about that. But it's always been there, even when we're winning. So I don't think winning cures that mental, like some people might be like, oh, Towns is just like mentally drained from losing those years. He's can't handle it. But I think it's more than that. I think it's just part of his DNA and the way he acts in a game. It's not changing. So how do you solve it? You let somebody else be the fall guy. And what I mean by that is you get the center who has to do the dirty work that's always in the scrums getting potential 50-50 foul calls in the NBA. Let somebody else be that guy that actually is a guy who should be starting. Because we have multiple guys that can do that. Problem is, They shouldn't be on the floor 30 minutes a night like Towns, and they can't play next to Towns for all those 30 minutes. So we need a guy like a Taj Gibson who can do some of those things. Remember, Taj was the bully. People forget that. Taj was the bully in our front court. It wasn't Towns. It was Taj and Jimmy. And those were the guys that allowed Cat to have his best defensive year ever by every analytic rating you can go by that year. So that's just my final thought, like rant there on what we need. I don't know if you agree with that or not, but
no, yep, I do agree. That's a great point you brought up. Get Miles Turner. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, man, I would love to get Miles Turner. I would love to get Miles Turner. Unfortunately, it seems that according to Doogie, we haven't really even given much follow ups or calls.
Yeah, that's pretty sad. But yeah,
it is sad. I also heard. I'm not trying to rip. This isn't a hate Gerson thing. We'll talk about, you know, in future podcasts, some of the good things he's done. He's done a lot of good things too. Like some of his drafting has been really good. But like, you know, like I heard from Doogie that he said we didn't even give a call on Rashawn Holmes, who signed for $14 million a year. I about cried and fell to the floor.
It's just so painful when defense is that needed. It's just, Oh my God, it hurts to hear those things. But
yeah, it is painful because Rashawn Holmes has been literally talking in his sleep. He said in a podcast about dreaming of being about the defensive player of the year. Now it's probably not going to happen, but being a third All NBA defender next year is very possible for
Rashawn
Holmes.
That's all the Wolves need. A third All-NBA defender at four. That's all we need.
So it's tough. Let's talk about the couple guys that are still left on the you know potential we could trade for or sign. So we got Paul Millsap. You got any thoughts on Paul Millsap? 36 years old.
Yeah, he's old. I mean, if we can sign him for the mid-level exception. And it doesn't like screw up our salary cap for other bigger necessities. He's a good leader, I guess. He's won in the playoffs with the Celtics and the Nuggets, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. So I mean, I think he can bring good leadership, a steady level head when times get tough. Like you alluded to, we need someone else to take the fall for that. So if the price is right, I would be interested.
Yeah, so like the reason why I'd like to get Paul Millsap on a one-year deal, at the right price, maybe the mid-level, maybe $8 million, I don't know, we'll see. But is because if we get him, you can stick him in our front court. I consider the front court 4 and 5, okay, depending mm-hmm. on the defense you play, the style you play. Okay, the 4 and the 5 is my front court. So if you get Paul Millsap, you put him at the 4. Sometimes you can play him at the 5 too. You can do it. But you can play the 4. And now think about your front court. What that allows you to do and still is now you don't need to play McDaniels out of necessity in the front court, which I don't think that's his best fit. I think if you had another actual guy who should be playing in a top 8 rotation and not like the 8th guy, like, you know, a top 7-6 guy, like a Paul Millsap who can play, and you pair that up with a Vanderbilt, and then you mix in some Naz Reid, because whenever you have Towns off the court and you got Millsap, it wouldn't be bad to have Naz because he can add scoring. Now you think about Vanderbilt and Millsap with Towns and Naz, now you have actually formidable backcourt with two of those guys actually being able to play above average defense in Millsap and Vanderbilt. And then you move McDaniels to the 3 and you get bigger, you get longer, and you get a better defender who can play and defend the 2, the 3, and the 4. And you can kind of get McDaniels focus on switches more, because if you have, I think McDaniels works best when he's switching in the perimeter. You're seeing him being able to slide his feet very well. He's really long. He's quick. That's not going to be an issue with him, and he's not really thick yet or strong yet. You know, so that'll maybe come, but he's best suited for that 3 kind of spot. And that allows you some flexibility in your front court to kind of work itself. So if I'm Gerson, I'm what I do is I'm really happy if I get Paul Millsap, because now, dude, think about your backup. for McDaniels at the three is Taurean Prince, who shot 40% from three last year, and he's a pretty decent defender too. Like, now all of a sudden, think about that. You have – so your three through five is Taurean Prince and McDaniels and Towns and Paul Millsap and Vanderbilt and Naz Reid. All of a sudden, you can handle a couple injuries and you might be actually decent, don't you think?
Yeah, and I also agree that McDaniels' spot is the three. I mean, he's just so skinny. Like, even if that dude puts on 20 pounds of muscle – he's still going to be one of the skinnier dudes at the four spot. And like you said, like, if he is at the three, you just get that much longer and bigger, like, on the court. And I know Gerson was, like, experimenting the opposite way drastically. Mm-hmm. And we all know how that didn't work out. But yeah.
We'll wrap this up with, there's a lot of people still talking about potential trades. Sure, it could happen. I don't know who said it. I think it was it was Johnny K. He said, if I had a percent chance on a bigger kind of size scale trade for the Wolves, or a trade that's really impactful around the league, he says, like, less than 10%. And I would agree. I would say even less than that. But I think it's becoming more and more obvious as you look at what the Timberwolves could do and what likely could happen. I think, like Britt says, the first domino fall is going to be the Bradley Beal deal. And I don't know if you heard about this, but there's a reason why Bradley Beal had to come back from the Olympics. And he was in the Olympics. If you watch For Country and Ball, good show on Peacock for basketball lovers. Okay. Good, good show. You got to watch every personality in that team and kind of like watch them play and talk. And, is Bradley Beal got called back, ultimately not by his decision, by the team, because they didn't want to risk getting him hurt because he is on the trade block. And that's pretty interesting. I actually don't know the legal, like, if Bradley Beal's agreed to it or if he fought it, because I'm sure it's still his right. I don't know if it's under his contract, but you'd think going for your own country would be your right. And the CBA and the players union would protect it. I'm not so sure there, but looking at the way the landscape's going to go, a Beal or potentially a Dame Lillard trade could happen, and then followed by a Simmons or a Turner to an extent. And I think that's pretty safe to say that that's going to start things off. And what I will add is that the Wolves are best suited to get in a deal as a third team player. Okay. Like, if we're going to get someone, it's not going to be Simmons. It's not going to be Turner. But I think we're going to be one of those guys to steal, because we all remember how we got Beasley, right? Mm-hmm. And how we got Vanderbilt, right?
Yeah, that was in a three-team deal to ship off Robert Covington.
Yeah, it was actually a four-team deal. It was the largest trade in NBA history, by the way. Most players ever involved, ever. And I could even name – there was like 16, if I remember right. I think there were 16. I don't even remember them, because we only covered like the guys we got. But we got Vanderbilt, who is actually a pretty nice role player, huh? Nice little piece. Yeah. And you get Beasley, who's been averaging 20 points, 19.9 points in a Wolves jersey for 55 games, shooting 40 from three, 45 from two, and 88 for free throw. So those are good pieces, and we got those from those kind of trades. I think – does it make sense to actually really add Taurean Prince for the Rubio thing, and then adding a second round pick along with the $5 million or $4.8 million in trade exception? You could argue yes, but I think it's ultimately to get that trade. Like, why would he get that trade exception unless, like you said, Sky, you trade Taurean Prince again to open up potentially $5 million and whatever you take back for a trade exception? Like, I think if a big trade happens, we're going to be one of those teams that are on it. And you start looking at the guys, like, who could we take? And I haven't done as much of work on that, but I think that's where we're going to end up trying to make a move. What do you think?
I want to know, what is the percentage of teams that have a trade exception, which is what we have, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this would be a pretty tough question to figure out, a lot of research, but what is the percent that the team actually uses that trade exception? Do they use that trade exception?
Great question. So here's the
majority
thing.
Of the time, or yeah, you can go. Yeah.
You told me, right, when we were talking about this, and I believe it is fact, it's true, that when if we are to use that trade exception, who has to be involved?
Taurean Prince.
And guess what happens when Taurean Prince's contract expires and he becomes a UFA?
Oh, I don't know.
The answer is the trade exception goes away. Okay? So, like, when you use a trade exception, and like you said, it has to include Taurean Prince, once their contract, there's a ticking bomb on that. Like, so you're either not using the trade exception to its fullest capacity by keeping him this whole year in a Wolves uniform, or you're trading him before he's got 1 year left at $13 million, or you're trading him between now and the trade deadline. And to me, why you do that trade doesn't make a ton of sense, in my opinion. It just doesn't. It doesn't. So, like, and it definitely, I'll tell you this, it definitely shuts out Culver, because now McDaniels and Taurean Prince definitely are a 3/4. So, I mean, it just hurts Culver even more. So, mm-hmm. I think that it makes a lot of sense that a trade for the Wolves is coming, but it's in a small form, and you're going to get a guy who can be in your top eight of your rotation. It won't be a guy that's the 10th guy. It'll be a guy who's top eight. So that is something that I would look to if I was a Wolves fan. I wouldn't be too much worrying about Ben Simmons and stuff, unless, again, the price drops. So we're going to wrap up this podcast, and we'll get into the Minnesota Twins in the next one. This is the Minnesota Sports Insider Podcast, and Skyler was the one joining us today. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.